Are you ready to unlock the secret to youthful vitality? Meet MitoPure, the revolutionary Urolithin A supplement from Timeline Nutrition. MitoPure ignites your body's natural anti-aging pathway, mitophagy. As we age, our cells can become damaged and dysfunctional. But with MitoPure, you can recycle these worn-out cells. MitoPure is a clinically validated solution backed by over 15 years of robust scientific research. Boost your cellular energy, enhance muscle strength and endurance, and even fight skin aging, all without changing your diet or exercise routine. I discovered MitoPure a couple of years ago after diving into the science of Urolithin A. Since then, it's become a vital part of my wellness routine. For more information and to order, visit timeline.com/Hoffman. Use code Hoffman at checkout to receive 10% off MitoPure. Whether you're looking to support muscle health, enhance your skin routine, or invest in your long-term vitality, MitoPure is your scientifically backed ally in the quest for slowing down the aging process. That's timeline.com/Hoffman for MitoPure. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. The subject is the intersection of politics with intelligent medicine. You know, it's often said that all politics are local, and what joins intelligent medicine listeners is, whether you're on the left or on the right, is our shared belief in health freedom and placing a priority on natural solutions to health problems. With us today is the executive director for the Alliance for Natural Health. He and I work conscientiously together on behalf of furthering the aims of natural health care and freedom of choice. ANH can be found at anh-usa.org, and we urge you to join. And we have an extraordinary opportunity because whether you are dismayed by the results of the recent election or whether you're exhilarated, there is an opportunity for change. And some of that comes through the agency of RFK Jr.'s nomination to be head of HHS. Whether that's going to go through is problematic because you're going to face a lot of opposition in Congress. Many congressmen are compromised, have conflicts of interest because they are very, very much at the beck and call of the pharmaceutical industry. So we'll see how that pans out. But at any rate, MAHA is being platformed. The very things that we believe in are part of the national discourse. Hooray. And change is in the air. So I'm going to ask Rob to talk a little bit about some of the initiatives that we are planning going forward. And we are in a great position to get some of these things accomplished.
The opportunities are huge, and we've got a number of legal precedents that we now have that open the door hugely. And one of the most obvious is the fact that the Chevron doctrine that has been around since 1984 was overturned mid-2024 in the Supreme Court. And this is a doctrine that basically says whenever there is legal ambiguity, deference should be given to the agencies. So that is the system that has allowed agencies such as the FDA, the EPA, and in fact, it was developed around a case, the Chevron case, Chevron being the oil company, around a case relating to environmental pollution. And it was the question is, you know, how much was Chevron as a company contributing to pollution versus individual plants? And in other words, the situation was complex and ambiguous, and the decision was made by the court back in 1984 when the Natural Defense Research Council took up the case to hand that decision to the agencies. So in this case, the EPA. And that is the very doctrine that has allowed the FDA and the FTC in our area, FDA controlling drug and food regulation, FTC controlling advertising, to essentially overreach, to go what we would regard beyond their legitimate powers, particularly when you base and you look at the Constitution, which is the very reason that a constitutional lawyer in the form of Jonathan E. Maud, now our general counsel, and one of the reasons he came and joined us mid-year is because of that very overturning of the Chevron doctrine. So if you
saw that as an opportunity, as an opening to affect some real change, because he has been possibly the most consequential person on the front of First Amendment rights and personal liberty when it comes to healthcare choices in the country. We're very fortunate to have him on our board.
Yeah. So, everyone on the program will have bought dietary supplements and seen that little box with the FDA disclaimer saying the FDA has not, assessed the safety or effectiveness of the product. That box was the result of the case that Jonathan took that was eventually won in the Supreme Court. Pearson and Shalala case. Doak Pearson, a couple of weeks ago, sadly,
right.
has passed
away. A real pioneer in this field. I mean, he used to be on the Merv Griffin show. He used to wear like sort of like a caveman costume. Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw. Sandy passed away, unfortunately, a few years ago. But they were true pioneers because they were talking about anti-aging in the day. It must have been the 1970s and 1980s. Exactly. And it was kind of a freak show then, people talking about nutritional supplements to extend life, but they were true pioneers.
They were indeed. So that was the case that really made change. And then, of course, Jonathan's work was very much then linked to how you could take science and communicate what individual nutrients, what kind of effects they would have on health. So that triggered the development of the qualified health claims regime. But what they've done through over-regulation is basically create a regime that makes it so, so difficult to be able to use existing science to be able to make that claim.
So one instance of that, we've talked about that here on Intelligent Medicine. Our audience is familiar with the case. We've had Nate Jones on the program, the maker of Clear, XLEAR, who has been enjoined by the FTC not to make claims that Clear could have an impact on preventing respiratory infections. And yet the science is clear, excuse the pun, that there really is an impact and that, while it's not some panacea against COVID, the magic bullet that slays all, the spike protein, there is some potential efficacy in an all of the above approach at self-care approach to preventing some of the consequences of this pandemic. And yet they slammed him, and he's been involved in, a multi-million dollar lawsuit. The government has infinite resources to go after independent manufacturers of innovative products. The process is the punishment. Basically, because who would undertake that kind of ordeal voluntarily? But anyway,
we've just submitted an amicus brief to help the court understand the constitutional aspects of where the FTC have gone wrong. Essentially, they're saying you don't have the science to be able to make that, and we've shown incredibly clearly that the science is there.
And that's through your scientific background, because you really speak the language of the people who, write scientific journal articles because of your academic background.
But that's why Jonathan joined us. He's felt, we've worked together for 20 years now in different guises. He's generally been our external counsel. And of course, when you're an external counsel and you go and hire a law firm, the process is expensive. Each time you go and you don't know really what you're up for. By coming in to ANH, we have the capacity to work day and night on a whole series of actions.
Yeah, he's like our legal Swiss Army knife,
Exactly. He's on our payroll now.
Yep.
Because we mean business, particularly post-Chevron. So if you look at the fact of how misaligned the process is, and you look at the FDA Modernization Act, within that act is a process that says that if a health authority makes a claim, that claim should be usable. And so we've been assessing that nothing has really happened with moving that forward. And the bottom line is, when you start evaluating all the authoritative claims that health agencies have made in the United States, this is the FDA through its Office of Dietary Supplements, through the CDC, even the EPA has made some comments. What we've done is amass around about 300 different claims that are made, 300 across, and these are nutrient or food-related claims. Now, what we argue under the
about health benefits, even addressing diseases, because the buzzword here is you can talk about supports optimal blood circulation, but you can't see, even if the science is there, the incontrovertible science is there, you cannot say that this, that, or the other thing reduces blood pressure or combats hypertension, because that's a disease claim. And it's absurd, because the information is there. The science is available.
Exactly.
But you are constrained from making truthful claims.
Exactly. The fact is, the majority of people over 50 have one or more conditions. And essentially, the drug companies we've just submitted a paper that has evaluated drug and food definitions in 18 different jurisdictions, including the United States, the UK, the European Union, etc., over a 120-year period. And what you can see is this incredible shift from when the definitions first developed. You've got the Pure Food Act in 1911 in the United States, the 1938 Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act that's still very much alive today. And these were originally developed in order to protect the public interest, to prevent people from being exposed to toxins.
Snake oil, they had all kinds of crap around, you know, the things that were made from dyes, and, you know, people were using calomel, which was laden with mercury, and, you know, all kinds of horrible things.
All of that. Yeah. Exactly. And as essentially, if you move to today, and you look at, say, the work of Peter Gotcher, the co-founder of the Cochrane Collaboration, you'll see that properly prescribed drugs are estimated to be the third leading cause of death in industrialized Western societies. So we have a situation where...
Iatrogenesis, you know.
So we have a situation where the very thing that the public looks to resolve their diseases and their conditions are also the most toxic substances we put into our mouths. Essentially, what the drug companies have done is capture the whole disease environment from a regulatory perspective. So they've locked nutrients and foods. We were talking earlier, what are the most important determinants of health? Well, social and environmental determinants. Now, when we look at environmental determinants, food, nutrition is right up there. Food is, when we put food into our mouths, it is probably the most intimate way by which we experience the environment. And so these are critical determinants, yet we haven't been allowed to say anything about it. And certainly if you are a maker of a product, a food product that you believe has health benefits, you can say nothing about it in relation to disease. But guess what? The health authorities can say something, but then they just leave this information because they know it's true. They've even listed all the science. So what we've done is assemble all of these. We've then evaluated all of the dosages and the amounts and the forms that their science talks to, and we go, my goodness, there are hundreds and hundreds of products out there on the market that could be, you know, consumed in much greater amounts if that claim was put on the package or in advertising or promotion or marketing for it. So this is that this FDAMA project, we're going to initially launch a petition we were thinking we would probably have to sue. With the change in administration, it may be that the petition is going to be accepted, and that, you know, this, I mean, this is right. This is one of the reasons we're so excited about RFK potentially getting into that position, because he'll get this in a millisecond.
He's a believer.
If the job is Maha, how about if you got a healthy food and you can genuinely make that food, that claim, because you haven't got some trivial amount of the substance in it, you got the amount that talks to the science. So, I mean, that is one of our actions. We have also recently filed a legal challenge, a lawsuit, to try and reverse the FDA's decision to effectively ban OTC homeopathic products.
Right, which is a huge category. And, you know, the notion is that it's the science is not there, that it's, you know, we don't, can't imagine how such infinitesimal quantities have any basis in real chemistry or physics. And yet this is a tradition that has been utilized by millions, if not hundreds of millions of people across the world. And is very robust, and people rely upon homeopathic remedies for self-care.
I think that's the problem. The FDA and many other regulators who deal with drugs, they cannot get their heads around the mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they think the mechanism doesn't work, how can the products work? And of course, what we were always doing is pointing them to the gold standard of evidence-based medicine, which is meta-analysis and systematic reviews of randomized controlled trials. And when you look at the balance of evidence, there is definitely very, very clear evidence of an effect that goes beyond placebo. So there's a consistent, you know, there's a Shang et al. Meta-analysis that didn't show that, but that was a setup. We've looked in detail at that. So the overall evidence is there. And in fact, that evidence is better than many, many widely accepted drugs on the market. So the question is, you know, what is the mechanism? When you have a succussion system, a dilution system that dilutes to such an extent that the so-called active ingredient may no longer be detectable by existing spectrophotometric methods, for example. And the reason I was fortunate enough to be speaking at the Royal Society of Medicine in London in 2018 on this very subject with a panel of seven others that included
Was the then Prince with you? Because I know he's a fan of homeopathic medicine. He might have been in the audience cheering you on.
The MC for the day was Dr. Peter Fisher, the head of what was London Homeopathic Hospital, then had to change its name to the London Hospital for Integrative Medicine because they couldn't have homeopathy in the title.
Oh, my goodness.
That happened to be the Queen's physician. And I knew him very well. And he emceed it. But Mortagnier, who really has been...
It was the discoverer of the HIV virus.
Exactly. He discovered the HIV virus. He did profound work that showed how DNA would leave memory of its form in water. And so as we've been closely associated with a international group of researchers through an organization called Homeopathy Research International that has basically been pulling together the evidence for around mechanisms. And you've got to see homeopathy as an energy-based medicine approach. And the fascinating thing about water, if you look at the work, Ron, you'll probably be familiar with the work of Dr. Jerry Pollack at Washington University.
Conformation of water molecules.
Exactly. Looking at his work on the fourth phase of water.
Right.
The fact that there is an ability to store information in water. In fact, the way in which water exists in living systems is not as H2O. It doesn't exist as two atoms of hydrogen bonded to one of oxygen. It generally exists as H3O2.
Like a structured water.
It's exactly that. And it basically assembles in a way that allows huge amounts of information to be stored within it. It is no surprise that, you know, in Silicon Valley, that may have to be renamed Water Valley, there is a big movement in the technology sector to look at water as replacing silicon because it has a much greater capacity to store information.
Wow.
It is also no surprise that all living organisms that we know of to date are wet and squelchy because they rely on water. And of course, we've known since 2009, even if you look at the assembly of the four-letter alphabet that makes up life through the DNA code, the coming together of cytosine and adenine and guanine, the CT and the AG, the adenine and guanine, and the cytosine and thymine come together through an energetic process. If you put them into a Faraday cage and you eliminate external sources, they will combine. They always, the CT and the AG, the adenine and guanine, all always come together on their own, as if, you know, was communicated to the public as an ESP, as an extrasensory process. And that's because when you look at the field of biophysics, we see that it is this energetic process which we can measure through electromagnetism that probably underlies life. You know, when we die, we still have exactly the same chemicals within our bodies when we're alive.
It's just not happening.
The change occurs because of the loss of electrical and electromagnetic energy.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just beginning to understand that these processes are really, really fundamental.
It's going to be an important healing modality, but also a peril in terms of all the EMFs that we're exposing ourselves to.
Exactly.
I just want to, you know, I love your exegesis of homeopathy, and that is an important issue. But I want to talk about some, you know, practical considerations when it comes to a potential RFK secretaryship of the HHS. Because were he to be in place, there seems to be some essential tension within a potential Trump administration. Because on the one hand, you know, you got Republicans and Trump in particular, who is, drill baby drill kind of guy, a deregulatory guy, you know, let industry flourish. And on the other hand, you've got an environmentalist who wants more strict controls on the food industry, on the chemical industry, on the pharmaceutical industry. How are we going to reconcile that? That's going to have to shake out in a future Trump administration with RFK at the helm of HHS.
That's my biggest concern. I can see there will be conflict. And, I think many of us have been interested in the viral image that came off Trump's private jet with RFK sitting there.
I think that's a perfect metaphor for what's going to happen. It's like, you know, he had to compromise and have the hamburger, the Big Mac, with the guys because
Ron, notice something. He's not eating it.
He's folding it.
He's holding it up. It's in front of him. He looks pretty miserable with it in front of him. And he could do what a number of politicians have said when they're accused of smoking marijuana. I didn't inhale. And so did he or didn't he, subsequent to the photograph being taken, actually consume that? What I find most interesting is that... If you look at the very the very nature of the McDonald's meal he had in front of him, it was not one of the healthy options.
No, indeed.
So, you know, was it just planted in front of him? In fact, Trump himself had the filet of fish, which you could argue is more healthy than the Big Mac or whatever it was that was a beef burger of some sort. But they all ate chicken nuggets as well, which I think is some of the most denatured protein, proteinaceous food out there on the market.
But I think it's a metaphor for the kind of challenges that he's going to experience, because as part of your administration, where let's face it, among rock rib middle America Republicans, it doesn't come easy to talk about protecting ourselves from EMFs, environmental chemicals, and being very, very fastidious about eating arugula. It's a sign of effeteness, liberal effeteness, to embrace these kinds of ideas.
Yeah, and I think one of the things we found interesting in looking at why it looks like Donald Jr. was the person who put that image out, and of course, if you look at the caption on the image that he put out on X, he said, "Maha starts something," words to the effect, "Maha starts tomorrow." and thinking about it, it could be viewed as the inner circle of the Trump team getting down to basics to the masses, to the very people who elected them, and to say, "Look, we're all in it together, guys. We got to do this together. We might be in Trump's private jet, but we and I think it's very well known that Trump has something of an addiction to fast food. So it could be part of quite a clever strategy, a game plan, to say, right, if we're going to have an impact on this, we've got to stop this idea of healthy eating being something that's only good for the middle classes, the privileged few. It's got to be something that works for everyone. And we're all starting from a place where we're eating these fairly crappy diets, and we're going to do it together." So I don't see it necessarily negatively, but I guess that comes from a place of being something of an optimist. And I immediately was thinking, what could be the positive in this circulation of this image? And I can see a very clear picture. In fact, we're just writing a piece right now for release tomorrow for the ANH newsletter that uses that as a hook to a bigger picture of what could RFK go on and do.
And, well, as is often said, Rob, the enemy of the good is the perfect. I think it was Voltaire who once said that. And so, rather than be extremely effete and perfectionistic, I think we have to look for incremental progress. And I think that given this environment, even that would be welcome, in environment,
exactly,
in nutrition, and in our freedom of speech regarding truthful claims. There's been a miserable time, and we've also experienced this at ANH in messaging. We experienced tremendous challenges in messaging, especially during COVID, when any suggestion that some sort of natural measure to support immunity, even the mention of herd immunity, people were saying that herd immunity is some sort of quack notion, that we have to rely on the vaccine, and that by talking about herd immunity, we would undermine people's confidence in the vaccine program, and so on and so on. And to speak about natural supplements like vitamin D for immune support, literally you could get deplatformed or at least shadow banned on media.
No, notice that particular view on herd immunity only emerged, that they decided to censor that, only emerged after they realized that the vaccines wouldn't stop transmission. And therefore, in a way, they weren't really ever working in the way that the average person considers a vaccine something that gives them protection from others. They were just working as an injectable medical treatment that gives you protection from disease at best. So yes, look, it's a very, very complicated picture. The free speech is the most important thing to defend. If we lose the ability to speak freely, to be able to reflect the science, and let's remember, you and I have both separately spoken to Cheryl Atkinson, following her publication of her book, Follow the Science. That is an extraordinary, reveal from someone who's sat in the hot seat in CNN, NBC, and others. And when I asked the question is, look, how do you identify truthful or false information? And one of her responses was, whenever you see lockstep media headlines saying one thing, chances are it's a cover up for something else. That's one of the ways you can see it. When you see fact checkers going hell for leather, saying that something is very, very black and white, that essentially maybe contests the view of some significant scientists out there, and it's very dismissive of that view, you can be pretty much assured that that view is important, it is plausible, and if that view actually propagated through society, it would cost a group of stakeholders like Big Pharma or Big Food a shed load of money. So there are these patterns that we've got to now kind of relearn to understand how the world works. And all of it is made more confusing because different people receive such a different slice of reality. We got to remember that there is no such thing as one reality. We all have our own reality, and that reality is based on the way in which our brains, the information we've accumulated in our conscious and subconscious minds, together with how that relates to our belief systems and the knowledge that we have accrued from whatever sources they are. If that all resonates, we think we've found a truth, but that truth is never absolute. And as more and more information is funneled through digital devices, and that information is channeled into specific echo chambers, it means that we all see a different slice of reality. And the danger is that that results in conflict. Now, if we shut down scientific discourse and we prevent scientists from different backgrounds from being able to share information with each other, we get even further away from understanding the best available science. And that, to in my mind, is the most problematic issue that has unfolded during the era of COVID. And I'm very, very excited at the prospect that scientific discourse, the very thing, you got to remember how science works. Ron, you know very well, but the idea is you come up with a hypothesis that is normally developed from observation or anecdote, and then you experimentally test that hypothesis. You then publish.
Starting from the premise that it's the null hypothesis, starting from the premise of skepticism.
Exactly. And always skepticism.
Right.
Yeah. And then you test it and you detail your methodology with the view that others can reproduce that same study. And they also attempted to disprove it, again, coming from that skeptical perspective. You then enter this peer review process that only allows studies that have gone through a comprehensive peer review process to get through, and then starts a process of scientific discourse, which is a bit like trying to push a sponge through a sieve and see if it reorganizes the other side of the sieve. And, the more voracious that contest is, and the more capable a particular hypothesis of surviving that contest, the more likely we are to really value that. Now, that entire system has broken down now.
Yes.
To the point that capture is the name of the game. That's happened across regulation. It's also happened across science. It's also happened across government. It's happened across, lobbying. So our ability to understand the uncertainty that inevitably exists. In science, most things are a different shade of gray. They are very rarely black or white.
Indeed. So hopefully there'll be a reawakening of scientific curiosity and dialogue, especially when it comes to things in the natural realm, controversial opinions that hopefully will stand the test of scientific inquiry. Okay, so great stuff. Important discussion. We're going to revisit with you periodically because things are moving fast in terms of our agenda in 2024 and going into 2025 as a new administration takes hold in Washington. Once again, let us tell people what people can expect from the Alliance for Natural Health, where people can get on board and get action alerts and participate.
Yeah, so please go to Alliance for Natural Health at ANH, which stands for Alliance for Natural Health, ANH-USA.org, and sign up for our free newsletter. You'll see that we have action alerts almost every week. Those action alerts can be fired off at individual Congress people. They can hit particular departments in the FDA, so they can be targeted. We have a pretty sophisticated mailing system.
It's your conduit to Washington. This is true participative democracy. I'll
just say that what we do is generally we prepare the action alert, but you can edit it. So if you want to change it and personalize it, in fact, we really recommend that you do because, any representative.
Otherwise, it seems like a form letter.
Will respond even more if they see the
tell a personal story.
A
you know how you exactly. benefited from natural medicine. And I just want to say, if you feel that you've been the beneficiary of information here on intelligent medicine, or in general, from natural care, if it's changed your life, if it's solved some of your medical challenges, if it's helped or saved a loved one, consider a contribution to the Alliance for Natural Health. There are options to do so. I personally contribute. I currently have a matching grant for $5,000. If you want to, contribute $5,000, I'll see you and raise you five. I'm happy to leverage your contributions to this worthy cause because it's something that I truly believe in. It's a personal legacy for me in the field of integrative medicine, which has been my, professional orientation. And it's all about my mission statement, intelligent medicine. So thanks, Rob, for joining us. We'll be anxiously awaiting some of the new initiatives from ANH, and we'll revisit with you soon in 2025. And I would wish you a happy Thanksgiving, but what do you have over there in the UK? You're just going to be working away right through the holidays.
We are indeed, but we get great pleasure to know that you guys are going to be chowing into some turkey and other wonderful delicacies. So that pleasure we experience
vicariously. Okay, great.
Yeah, across the pond.
We'll have a drumstick for you. So
thank you.
All right.
That was great pleasure to talk again, Ron.
Yes, indeed. That's Rob Verkerk, Executive Director of the Alliance for Natural Health. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover intelligent medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have, and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything intelligent medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations. This holiday season, don't miss out on your chance to stock up on your favorite supplements during the Black Friday Cyber Monday sale at my FullScript online supplement dispensary. November 29th through December 3rd, 5 days only, Get 10% off and free shipping on my entire inventory of top supplements at drhoffmanstore.com. You stock only the highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere. The very same supplements I prescribe to my patients and take myself. It's the safest and most convenient way to purchase my curated supplements. Buying through Fullscript offers fast, free shipping and optional refill reminders via text or email. It's safe, secure, and includes world-class customer service. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for 10% off and free shipping for 5 days only from November 29th through December 3rd. That's drhoffmanstore.com.